Testing. All right, cool. Okay, if you would bear with me, we have quite a few announcements to make. Just a couple things on the way the next few weeks are going to run. As you know, on February 9th, a lot of us are going to Phoenix to do this big banquet. If you don't know why we're doing the banquet, you should by now, but I'll quick give you the short of it. Somebody offered us $300,000 if we're able to raise $100,000 to go towards a building. Many of our supporters in this community live in Phoenix, and so they would love to see the village, would love to hear about the village, would love to experience you guys, and so they we're going to throw a banquet for them, and they will attempt, I suppose, to help us raise money. And so that's what that is about. But that's going to change the next few weeks. So next week, a couple of things. One, we're not going to be in this room. We're going to be in the chapel, which is that way. There'll be signs pointing to that. And because, for a couple of reasons. One, we don't want to haul all of our equipment over there. Two, the Super Bowl. Three, just the next week is the banquet, and we just really don't want to stress out about anything. We're just going to have kind of like a service, sort of like our Christmas Eve service. So we'll do some candlelight singing, we'll sing hymns, we'll do some reading of scripture, and then we're going to need to load some stuff in vehicles to get ready for the banquet, so if you would be willing to help with that. But that service is going to have kids in it, and it'll probably be 45 minutes to an hour. The following week is the 10th. The 9th is the banquet. I don't even think many of us would even want to come to church after the banquet. So what we're going to do is we're just going to pop up a bunch of tables and order a bunch of food, and you're just welcome to come here at 5, and we're going to eat, hang out, and talk about what God did and how many people we left in Phoenix and things like that. So that's I'm looking forward to that. Now, there is this sign-up sheet on the front here has a list of a lot of you signed up for different things. Some of you may not be signed up here but still want to go to Phoenix, or you don't know what you could plug into. Seriously, there'll be some more organization as to how we're all getting up there. But as many of us who can get up there at like 10 o'clock in the morning, you'll get plugged into something. There's a lot of cooking, because we're probably cooking from anywhere from 100 people to 250 people. So there's like plates that we have to make and all this kind of stuff, and setting up things. And if there are too many people, that can only be fun to have too many people. It's a lot more fun than not having enough people. So come, and there'll be more information on February the 3rd, I believe it is, as to what we will be doing with stuff and where you, and how you can get up and who's caravanning up and all that kind of stuff. There's a couple other things that I just want to make note of. First, this is the infamous sign-up sheet, and on it, there are a couple important things that you can sign up on. One of them is children. Now, once the banquet is over, a lot of the children stuff is going to be transitioning, and we're going to be doing a couple of different things, splitting kids up. But for right now, we're just doing things the way we're doing them, and if you could help out, that'd be great. The parents run the Sunday school kids' vespers, but it's a great part for you just to get to know the kids, experience them, and even if things change, sign your name up somewhere and help somebody out. That would be great. That would be very helpful. There are a bunch of other things you can sign up for, but one that you might take note of is that on February 1st, we will be having a prayer meeting, and the directions are on here. And that prayer meeting is simply, we want to pray about the banquet. We want to pray for safety driving up and back, for what God's going to do, all that kind of stuff. There's a long list of people signed up here. You can sign up for that if you want to be part of that. That would be great. And then you can kind of, the rest of it is sort of self-explanatory, so I'm going to let you wade your way through it. A couple other things that you might want to make note of. One is, I was sick. I really appreciate last week everybody putting everything away. But I do have a question. Who got the offering?
Oh, I
have it. Oh. My wife has the offering. All righty. That's rather suspicious. Okay. If you're visiting with us, back on that back table, there is the Compendium to the Village. It has no pretty pictures. It's a ton of text, but it explains everything that you want to ask questions about the village, why we do what we do. You can grab one of those. The other thing that's back there are two CDs. One is all the MP3s of the last year off the website of the music, that you, if you want to listen to that, and then our studio CD. They're both $5 back there. You can grab that if you want. There's also some magazines and different stuff that people in the community have written, and there's an info sheet about the banquet. So lots of information on the back table that you can be part of. Thank you for listening to that informational. I appreciate it. I will pass you the notes. If you would just pass those back, I'd appreciate it. Two very important drinks of any preacher, Mountain Dew and water. Okay, so let me just give you another bit of information on how the next month or two is going to work and some of the things we're going to be trying out. This week, we have one more, after this week, we have one more time in Peter, and then we're going to be going into the book of Nahum. It's three chapters. It's a minor prophet. It's a very violent, justice-oriented book. But we're going to give you the entire text before we preach on it. And there's going to be Ron, Layman, Rod, and I will have done some devotionals through it and give you some study information. And so what we're hoping, though it'll be okay if you lose this, that you keep it with you for the next that 4 weeks that we go through it. Take notes, meditate on it. We'll go through it together. But there'll always be extras here for you if you forget. So that's kind of where we're going. But right now, we are in 1 Peter chapter 5, and we're going to go through verses 1 through 7. Just as an informational, 1 Peter, or Peter himself is an apostle of Christ. Christ called him the rock, but as one pastor said, that I think was more like a joke, not a serious, I'm going to build my church on you. It's sort of kind of like calling him Rocky. Like, you know, you have a fighting chance, but it's pretty unlikely that you're going to be. Because the next few verses, he calls him Satan and tells him to get behind him. Anyway, all that to say simply that Peter is this passionate guy who's a core part of the early church. And he writes a letter to the churches in Asia Minor, five major provinces that are under suffering. They're under persecution. They're under a suffering for their faith. And so tonight he's going to talk about leadership. And he's going to, but so I've gone on this kick and I've started titling my messages that may not last for very long, but this week is leading and following in a suffering community. So let's just dive right in. On the inside of your notes is the text. We'll start in verse 1 of 1 Peter chapter 5. It says, "Now, as an elder myself and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as one who shares in the glory to be revealed, I exhort the elders among you." Okay, so we're gonna talk about elders quickly. Elder, and what I want if you look on the back, you'll note that I put the email about the leadership in our community. And so even though we're going to be talking about elders, I want to also be talking about leaders in our community. But elder itself is a very, very old term. Because way past and before even the Old Testament, but we find elders themselves showing up in Israel when they're in the middle of the desert and Moses has led like this million people out of Egypt. And they're wandering around the desert, and he's trying to do everything. And he realizes, with the help of his father-in-laws are very valuable, that he should just divide it up into 120 people and put elders, older men, who could do all of the, you know, could handle all the disputes and kind of shepherd everybody. But it's not just a Jewish thing. The Greeks and the Romans respected older men and looked to them as the people who would administer law and kind of run the community, and Egyptian. It's a very ancient thing. So if you are to be an elder, you are stepping into an office that is really, really old. You're stepping in, it's not something just newly that happened. It's a very old office, and it's a very honored office. When Paul would plant a church, he would go into a city, and he would find the older men and appoint them the leaders of his church. And that's kind of where we get this idea of elder. And so we have Peter, an elder, exhorting elders amongst the people. Now, the reason I called this leading in the midst of suffering is that, if you remember last week, we looked over the Peter's user guide to suffering. And the very first thing that Peter says to these people is, don't be surprised by the fiery ordeals that you experience. These are people who are under the midst of suffering. And so Peter is talking to leaders who are caring for people who are suffering, and Peter is going to tell them one thing that is very, very important. But before we get to that, last week we redefined suffering, and I think this is important, because at this point, from what I know, none of you have been ripped out of your homes, none of you have been burnt at the stake, because you're still here, and you smell okay, and so I'm pretty sure that you're not necessarily physically being persecuted for your faith. You're not being beaten for your faith. Your kids are not being torn away from you. So the question then becomes, what is suffering for people like us in the 21st century? Well, I would argue to you that suffering is living under the curse. You live under sin. And so suffering is, you actually suffer yourself. You suffer your fallen self. You suffer a world that doesn't necessarily follow the same ideas. And so there's a persecution in that. And you suffer because you've chosen an enemy when you step into the kingdom, or you've been chosen to be an enemy, and that is Satan, who prowls around, as we'll find out next week, or in a few weeks in Peter, to just grab you and snatch you and to abuse you. And so when we think about suffering and what that looks like normally, that could mean you've suffered cancer. Your husband or kids, maybe they've died, or you've lived through a divorce, or you are divorced, or you're in a car accident, or people within your community or outside have said horribly mean things to you that sort of, or you've been sexually or physically or emotionally abused. All of those things are forms of suffering that you are either in the process of, or there's an earthquake back there. Anyway, all of those are a process of suffering. All of those are things that you can experience. So, when I talk to you, we are a suffering community. And so leaders in this community, people who want to be leaders, people who are falling, but in particular leaders, I'm speaking to you tonight, and I will be speaking also to the people who are following them. But I want you to listen, because I think it's important, because I think this in particular, this community, is more than many communities I've been amongst a suffering community, or at least a community that is willing to acknowledge its suffering. And so this is what Peter says to the people. Verse 2. He's exhorting these elders to tend to the flock of God that is your charge, exercising oversight. So the one thing in the midst of suffering that elders and leaders are supposed to exercise is oversight. Now, before we get into what it means to lead, I want to acknowledge a few things. First, I had a mentor. His name was Mark Bryans. He's the one who mentored me for the first 3 years of my marriage with my wife, and he performed our wedding and all that kind of nice stuff. And he had lots of good sayings, and I spent lots of time with him. But one of the things was he was a sheep farmer at one point in his life. And so he told me about how sheep, when they break into clover fields, or alfalfa fields, or whatever field they get into, they eat and they start blowing up. and they get so heavy that they fall over, and their mouths keep going, trying to eat. And so when you are compared by God to sheep, what he's telling you is that you're a dumb sheep. Okay, now, here is Peter, an elder who happens to be a dumb sheep. So what he's saying is, me, an elder who's a dumb sheep, exhorts the dumb sheep elders with the rest of the dumb sheep to lead them. So what I'm saying when I say all that is to acknowledge that even if you're a leader in a community and you feel like you're a shepherd, you're still a dumb sheep. So remember that as a leader, and I say that as a leader up here, we're not very smart. And Peter understands that. So as I thought about that, I thought, well, what then does it look like to be a leader? What does it look like? What am I supposed to do? If it says that I'm supposed to tend the flock, and if this word oversight actually means to look out over and to tend to and to almost like to pick through, you know, to pick through the wool for bugs and stuff like that. The idea is that suffering people need to be cared for and looked after. But how do you do that if you're a dumb sheep asked to be an elder, asked to be a leader? Well, the only thing I concluded is that Peter says that he exhorts all of these people as a witness to the sufferings of Christ. And Christ suffered for one thing, and that was that you and I could not be dumb sheep. That there is a transformational process happening so that we can become not dumb, not stupid. We can become what God created us to be. We can step into that image. So as a leader, what do I do? What do you do? As a leader, all I'm doing is joining God in what he's doing already. And the only way we could figure that out was to actually look at what David has to say, because he was the best shepherd that we know in Scripture, about how God shepherded him. And then look at that as to how God and how elders in the community are supposed to oversee people. So, in your text, there is Psalm 23, and I'm just going to read the whole thing to you, and then we're going to go over some stuff. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the right paths for his namesake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. See, rod shows up in this. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. What I did is on the other side of your page, I came up with what I call a roadmap to leading and following, and just walk through some of this. And let me just go through some of the points that I came up with what oversight looks like, what it looks like to be a leader. The first thing that a leader does is he makes people rest. You know, get down, rest, sit. Right? Very good. Second thing that a leader does is that he leads out of chaos. He leads out of chaos. You know, like most people, including myself, are in a Chinese fire drill, you know, open the door of the car, get on the other side. Open the door of the car, get on the other side. And part of what a leader does is reaches into the Chinese, you know, fire drill and yank the person out and say, okay, come on out of chaos. Because most of us, inside of us, our life has chaos. And so part of being a leader, part of oversight in the community is leading people out of chaos. Third thing is that a leader joins God in restoring people's souls. So it's like extreme makeover, right? A leader is a participant in the extreme makeover process. A leader is also someone who leads in the path towards God. So the onward ho kind of thing. A leader doesn't abandon. So when a leader sees people who they really are, doesn't go, oh gosh, well, I think I'll be leaving now. A leader comforts through discipline, right? This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. A leader leads through discipline. He provides in the midst of suffering and noise. And he blesses. He provides authentic relationship. I just want to walk through these and kind of flesh them out a little bit. The first thing that a leader does is that he makes people rest, right? He leads, makes me lie down in green pastures. There's two reactions to this. If you're a leader, you're either a very, you know, hip, postmodern leader, and you're like, oh, I don't want to make anybody do anything. They might get offended. And if you're kind of a power-driven guy, you're like, oh, this is great. I have the freedom now, along with God, to make people do things. Now things are going to get done. The thing that I think is two things that are important here. One thing is that people need to rest. People who are suffering need to rest. And second, if you're a leader, you need to be willing to make people do things. You need to be able, need to be willing to make people do things. The second thing is that a leader leads out of chaos. It says that he leads me beside still waters. You know, so many of our lives are built in chaos. Like, I so much am like, okay, you know, and that chaos is all built up in anxiety for almost all of us. So it's like, oh, I need to be a good husband or a good father to my daughter, and so I need to spend time with her, I need to figure this out. And I get all worked up, and then I figure it out. I'm like, oh, good, I've got it figured out. Oh, but now I need to figure out how to be a good pastor. And everybody's going, oh, this is not good. I got to figure my church out. Right. Well, got to be a good husband. Got to figure out my... And it's Chinese fire drill of life that all of us go through. And the thing is, you might be saying, no, my life isn't full of chaos. I guarantee if you're saying it's not full of chaos, I'd be happy to sit down with you and prove to you that there are parts of your life that have chaos in them at some point or at some level. And part of being a leader is A, acknowledging your own chaos, but B, willing to get messy. Because getting into the Chinese fire drill is a little scary because people go fast in and out of those doors. And so you need to be willing to get hurt and get a left elbow here and there from people. Third thing is to restore our souls. It says he restores my soul. Literally what that means is that God actually makes people whole. And so if you're a leader, and if you're in this community, part of the process, if you're a leader, is joining God and bringing wholeness to people. Joining God to bring wholeness to people. Which, to be honest with you, actually takes some of your time. It takes a whole bunch of thinking. A lot of intention, because you got to think about people. You got to be like, what is God doing? The other thing is you have to ask that question. What is God doing? You have to be in tune with God yourself. You have to be listening to God so that you can join him in what he's doing in people's lives. It says that the fourth part of oversight is that you lead to the paths of God. And here it says that he leads me in right paths for his name's sake. All that God is his name. And when we become followers of Jesus, and when we enter the kingdom, our whole life becomes walking towards Jesus. The only problem is that because we're sheep, there's so many distractions. Those distractions are what people say, the damage that's been done to us, our own sin, our own compulsions, our own wrestlings. And so part of being a shepherd, part of being an elder, a leader in community, is sort of trying, like herding two-year-olds. And that you are on one side of them, on the next side of them, you're trying to keep them in a straight line for a bit of time. And that's what it is. If you're a leader, you have to be willing to bring people, A, you have to know the path, but B, you have to be willing to really engage and be left and right. There went Tom. Oh, got to go over. Move Tom over. Part of leading is being willing to be a buffer and to continue to point in the right direction. Fifth, oversight. Leaders don't abandon people. I was talking with a bunch of pastors on Friday down at the U of A, where I saw many, many NAV kids and people that kept bumping into me. Hi, Eric. None of them that go to this church. It's weird. I don't even know how these people know me. I think I have a picture somewhere at the U of A. Anyway, I was with all these pastors, and this one pastor was telling a story. He's an interning at our in not he's not an interning, he's an interim. How's that? Yes. Anyway, he's pulpit supply. basically. He preaches on Sunday for a church that lost their pastor, and this is how they lost their pastor. A church in California offered him $15,000 signing bonus and $20,000 down, or 20% on whatever house he purchased down. He got a signing bonus to leave the church. And I'm not making a judgment on him. Okay. Yes, I am. But it is our culture at some level to abandon people when things are better on the other side. And what I don't know his situation, but a leader who's overseeing suffering people doesn't leave. And one of the things that really touched me about Rod, if you guys remember this, but Rod was offered a job with the CRC to be their big head honcho, and he applied. But what he said is he came to all of us and said, if you don't want me to go, then I'm not going. You guys have to say, God wants you to leave. So it doesn't mean that leaders don't leave. People don't leave. What it means is that like in the Old Testament, when or in the New Testament, when Paul in Acts is leaving, the elders are weeping when he's headed to Israel, to Jerusalem, saying, don't go, we don't want you to go. And there's an outpouring of emotion. And when they sent Paul out, all of the elders and the people prayed, and they said, yes, this is where you should go. So part of being a leader is being willing to hear what people are saying to you and being willing to submit, even if there's good signing bonuses other places. Because abandoning suffering people only means more suffering, and that's not a good thing. I don't know what number it is, but the next one is provides for in the midst of suffering. I love that he says he puts the table together and then in front of the enemies. Like, first thing, eating. Eating is comforting. Now, I know not all of you believe that, but I'm telling you, eating is comforting. It's why you're supposed to do it 3 times a week or another day. No, I'm not promoting that. For some of you, 3 times a week would be a good idea. No, including myself in that. No, 3 times a day. The reason that we eat is partly because it's comforting. It gives us strength. And what I love is that a leader sets a table where? Not away from the enemies, but in front of the enemies. A leader comes by and doesn't pull people out of their struggles, doesn't say, I'm going to fix everything. In fact, it's more like, you want a slice of steak? Oh, here, ow. Oh, that's an arrow. Let's pull that out. Okay, let's keep eating. Oh, ow. Oh, let me pull that out of your chest. Oh, good job. Okay, we're not going to get a lot of eating done. You better eat quickly. The concept is, the idea is that in the midst of suffering, leaders don't help people escape, but they strengthen people, and they eat with them, and they make themselves vulnerable to suffering too. That they make themselves vulnerable to the suffering that other people are experiencing. And lastly, it says that he anoints the head with oil, his cup overflows, there's all this goodness and mercy. There's this blessing from God on people. And so as a leader, as you join God, part of it is intimacy. Part of it as a leader, you have to be willing to have an authentic relationship with people. You have to be willing to engage in relationship. And you know what? Sometimes it's easy to be up here and to be a leader and to sort of keep everybody at arm's length. Because wait a minute, if there's too many of you, I'm going to be overwhelmed and then I'll be no use to anybody. And so then we create this protection around us, this hedge, that there's no authentic relationship. Now that doesn't mean that leaders need to be good buddies with everybody. But it does mean that part of being a leader is that we're willing to engage. And we're willing to have an authentic relationship with people. So, if you're a leader, that is what is being told to you as oversight. What I love here is if you're a follower, there's a couple things you might want to take note of. Your leaders are going to make you rest. Resting seems to be a huge theme in being a follower. Resting and following. And it seems like one of the major themes is that leaders are here and God is here with them to protect you and to lead you in safety and to give you relief from your suffering. But, so that's in my mind what's all packed into this word oversight. But, Peter, with all this in mind, and with the concept of a suffering community and a violently suffering community, he gives some warnings to both followers and leaders. And this is what he says, starting in halfway through verse 2. So we're supposed to do this oversight for the people, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you do it, not for sordid gain, but eagerly. Do not lord it over those in your charge, but be examples to your flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will win the crown of glory that never fades away. And here is what I think is very interesting. In the same way, you who are younger must accept the authority of the elders. What I like about this is that for the followers, it says, in the same way. And what you need to understand about this younger and older is that there's a transition that's happened. Yes, older people still have wisdom. I'm going to affirm that. But there's a knowledge transition in our world. See, older people also had a lot of knowledge because they lived a long time, so they'd seen a lot of things. But now people have lots of knowledge. And so they can be put in places of leadership. But also, in the early church, Paul tells Timothy, don't be ashamed of your youth. So there is a transition in the culture in the earlier church that elders doesn't just mean old. It means someone who's an authority over you. And younger doesn't necessarily mean that you're just younger. It means you're a follower. You're the person following the leaders. And what he says here is he gives three warnings to both leaders and followers. And so I want to walk through that together. And the first thing he says is not to do this under compulsion, but willingly. So first for leaders, not under compulsion. This is hugely important because when people are being dragged away and killed, who's really being dragged away and killed? The pastors and the leaders are being dragged away and being killed. The rest of you are like, oh, bye. See you later. Christian, don't know that word. Sorry. No, seriously, the leaders are the most visible because there's no way to verify the rest. And so what he's saying is you're going to die. So if you're going to die or you're going to suffer or you're going to have oppression, you need not to do it because people want you to do it or because you feel like this is some duty that you need to do. So, but translate that forward. The thing that you have to think of is that if you're a leader in this community, you need to ask yourself, am I doing it because God wants me to be a leader, or am I doing it because I'm under some strange compulsion that I need to examine and figure out? Because what God says through Peter is that you need to be doing it willingly. It's something that you need to be willing to enter into. If you're a follower, I would argue to you that you need to ask this question. If I'm in the village or wherever you are at church, am I there under compulsion? Now, that doesn't mean that, like, so this week you say, I'm here willingly, and next week you say, oh, well, this week I'm under compulsion, so I'm out of here. No, what it means is that when you said, I'm part of this community, was it because you felt like you had to be part of this community because someone was making you, or was it because something God wanted you to do? And if it's something that God wanted you to do, then you need to do it willingly. Otherwise, you need to say, you know what, I shouldn't be here. It doesn't mean that you can't say, oh, he's trying to make me lay down right now. I am so not here anymore. I am not willing. That's not what it's saying. So it's not about the way you experience the leaders per se, unless, like Calvin says, they're sinning and blatantly unrepentant, then you can leave. Second thing, it says that you should not do it for sordid gain, but eagerly. So I don't know who he was talking to because elder, actually, you hear that elder means double honor. You read that in the Bible. But really, actually, the word is translated better pay. Double pay. And so an elder in this first century church was actually receiving pay. This is why Paul says, we worked and we didn't take money from you. Our gospel was pure. You know, that is the way Paul is. But he was making a point. I didn't do it for money. And what Peter is saying is, What do suffering people do when someone loves them? They hand them money. It's pretty common. That's how people get taken advantage of often. You see this in client and clientele in counseling, where people, well, this person's just giving me good things, so I'll just keep cashing, giving them money. And this is kind of nurtured instead of helping the person. You're just creating this dependency because you want to gain money. It's about money. And so you shouldn't be a leader if you're trying to gain something. You should do it eagerly. I love this. It's not to gain something. It's to be like, hey, I'm happy I'm an elder. I'm happy I'm suffering. I'm happy I'm leading people suffering. I'm eager to do this. Yay. Go. Now, if you're a follower, I don't know what sordid gain you can get, but what I do know is that what he's saying is that you should eagerly follow your leaders. Not like, oh gosh, what is Aaron Cromer telling me to do again? No, it's, wow, what does he have to say? What are the leaders saying? What am I supposed to do? I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm eager. I'm eager to do this. I'm eager beaver. This is good. Right? And the last one, as a leader, it says, do not lord it over those in your charge, but be examples to the flock. Lording it over. It's basically power. It's basically, if you're a leader, the one thing you don't want to be in for is power, to control people, to have a sense of, well, when I say something, Julie jumps. It's amazing. I have power. But it's not about power. It's actually about walking in front of people as an example. And so as a leader, if you're in it because you really enjoy having people follow you, and it really is why you're doing it, to see them follow, then you shouldn't do it. You should be an example. So if you're in it for power, you should get out. If you're following, you could be in it for power. You could be in it to be next to power. You could be in it because you want to be friends with the leader. If you're friends with the leader, then wow, then you're in. You're in the in circle. You're in with people. But instead, the thing you need to do, if you're a follower, is simply be an example of what it looks like to follow. We want people to say, wow, when Jesse, watch Jesse as he follows the leaders. He's a good example. Right, Jesse? When we talk about leaders, what you want to hear as a leader is you want people to say, well, that's the way Eric does it. Well, that's the way Karen does it. You know, that's the way Aaron Cromer does it. Yeah, I want to do it like that. You want to be an example that people are saying, that's what I want to be like. That's what I want to do. And so, in the midst of the suffering, these are the things, as a leader and as a follower, Peter wants us to know about. Now, here's the kicker. We're all dumb sheep. And this is a great talk I just gave up to this point. And you should be excited to either be a follower or a leader by now, or you should be running crazy out of the room. But you know what? We're stupid sheep. And to try to follow a dumb sheep, it doesn't work very well. And Peter understands that. And so in verse, where is this? Verse 5, halfway through, it says, "And all of you must clothe yourselves with humility in your dealings with one another." So, I don't know about you, how many of you, and I know some of you will raise your hand anyway, but don't. How many of you go to the bookstore looking for a book on the 10 steps to being humble? Well, you're not going to find it. There is not, in secular and Christian world, there are very few books that sell very well that are telling you how to be humble, because most of us don't understand what it means to be humble. But what Peter says, and I'm pretty sure that the first century world didn't really have humbleness down. Peter says, at least what we can discover from this one little part of the verse is that humility, whatever it is some kind of discipline, because you have to put it on. It is a clothing. And so humility is some form of discipline, something that you have to do, some mental decision processes that you have to work through. So the first thing, and for you to be a good follower, to be a good leader, it says you have to clothe yourself with humility, whatever that is. You need to do it. So the first thing you need to know is there's being a good follower, being a good leader, requires a particular discipline, a clothing of humility. And then it says, "For God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Okay, so still don't know what humility is, but I do know that God opposes people who are proud, and he likes people who are humble. So pride must be somewhere on the opposite end of humility. And pride, what is pride? Well, simply really what pride is you saying you're God. You saying, well, look what I've done. You saying, this is what's important. What I think and what I want is important. Egocentrism and arrogance is what pride is. It's all about me. It's all about what I want. It's all about my own chemical responses and how I feel. And so what pride truly is just simply selfishness. So humility then must be at some level the opposite of that. But the clue is still, it's still coming. It says that God, verse 6, it says that, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that he may exalt you in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Now, that's a decent translation, and that's how that reads. But as I was listening to Piper talk about part of this passage, John Piper, a preacher, really good guy, he pointed out that the NASB, which is a more literal translation, a word-for-word translation, shows that this is all one sentence. So let me read it to you again. It's down there. It says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time. The NRSV says, makes a new sentence at cast, but not in the Greek. It says, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. So the first thing in being a follower, a leader, and being humble is to realize that it's not about you. It's about God. The only way that you can follow me is if you realize that God is in control. The only way that you can follow me is if you realize that God is in control. Because if he's not, don't follow me. Because we're headed down the wrong path. The only way that I and others in this community can be leaders is if we realize that God is in control and cares about the people around us. So, to be a part of humility is saying, you know what, God, it's not about me. It's not about the person leading me. It's about you. And so, it's willing to put yourself under someone. It's willing to order yourself under God. And then here comes the kicker, because this is really what humility is. Casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. I don't spend much time saying that this community is very arrogant. Yeah, I think there's a lot of angst in this community, but it's not a very arrogant community. I've been around arrogant communities. This is not one. But this is an anxious community. I'm an anxious pastor. We are anxious people. We have lots and lots of anxiety, and I don't know if you realize it, but that's pride. Anxiety is pride. Anxious about life, it's pride. You are proud. And why is that? Because somehow you believe that you can figure it out. Anxious people, talk to them, which means all of you, just turn to the person next to you, and ask them about their life, and they will tell you how they're trying to figure it out, and they're trying really hard, and they have a lot of solutions, and a lot of books that they've read, or a lot of books that they've heard other people have read that they should be reading, but they're just spending too much time obsessing about it all, that they don't have time to read those books. But the thing is, it's because you're too proud. You're too proud. So when your leader is asking you to go in a direction you don't want to go, and maybe it's the wrong direction, you have to be, and maybe it's more anxiety producing than you want. Part of being able to be a good follower, part of being able to clothe yourself with humility is to say, okay, ultimately, the person that I am entrusting my life to is the God of the universe who knit me together before I was ever even had a thought. He knew me, he cared about me, and if I'm going to get hit by a car tomorrow, he's not going to, there's nothing I can do about it. But he's in control, and I am going to rest in that. Does that mean that that's going to change the chemical response in your chest and you're not going to have any anxiety or you know, frustration or no. But part of the process of not being proud and of putting yourself under God and being in a place where you can be lifted up is saying, okay, underneath all these anxiety, underneath all the feelings, underneath all the stress about being a good dad, about being a good pastor, about being a good husband, about being out of debt, all of those things, underneath it is a belief that somehow if I figure it out, it'll all work out. The thing is, it's not going to. I'm not going to get it right. But God is willing to what? Make a table in front of my enemies, make me rest even though I'm stressed out. And he's going to do that with leaders. He's going to do that with you. So tonight, the thing that I hope our community, as we come through this banquet, as we head into the rest of the year, as we look at getting a building, as we try to figure what the heck is going on and what God is doing with us, that we would be a people who are choosing to clothe ourselves with humbleness, which is we need to step into the discipline of casting off our anxieties. And to do that, we need to identify them. And to do that, those of you who are leaders in this community need to take your oversight seriously, because we are a suffering community. And we are people who are suffering, and we need to wrestle with that. So let me just close here, and as time is always running out on me. You know what? I was going to close by just reviewing it all, but instead, so that you can have a few minutes to ask me questions, I will just close right there. And if you have some questions you want to ask me, you can. Otherwise, we'll close. Any questions? Anybody? In the back. I think the anxiety, which is worries and cares, if we become so wrapped up in those, which is what getting caught up in anxiety, because the word for anxiety is fear, so if we get wrapped up in our fears, what we're saying is that somehow we can solve this. That somehow if we think hard enough and we figure it out, we can get it taken care of on our own. Back. That's very good. Thank you. Anybody else? Got a few minutes. Pam. I think you have to be both a leader and a follower. In that, I can tell you that many times, in particular with Ryan and with my wife and with Julie, there have been times in this church where I feel like I'm in the midst of chaos, and I feel like I don't want to do this anymore. And there have been many times where, in a lot of ways, Brian and Julie, in particular my wife, have said to me, no, stop. You need to rest. You need to stop thinking. You need to get out of the Chinese fire drill. We're going to grab you out of this. You can't do what you're saying. You're too wrapped up in your own anxiety. So yeah, there I am, a follower. I'm not a leader. I'm submitted to them. Yes. I would say I'd be inviting you into both. Any other questions? One more question, and then we'll close. No, we don't have to have one more question. Yeah, it's probably not the most. My understanding of Chinese fire drill, you can correct me, is just running out of a car and running into a bunch of people. Right, at a red light, everybody jumps out of the car and runs around, even the driver, and runs around and gets in different seats. The clowns do it, yes. It's a good example of us. All right, well, before we get here later, I'm just going to go ahead and close in prayer. Let's pray. Dear God, thank you so much for this community. Thank you for your love for us. Thank you that in the midst of our own anxieties and our own stressors, that you still love us. You still care for us. You still walk right next to us. You provide us with leaders. Thank you for that. Lord, we just pray that you be with us the rest of this evening. Amen. There are a couple ways this evening that you can respond. One is through offering.